John Williams' Superman theme, as if it needs any introduction, which should give you an indication as to the subject of our latest episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. I've seen this film a couple of times now, to be honest, and I've got to say, it's such a sensory overload that I think it actually took me until the second viewing to kind of really allow everything to kind of just sit with me, and I feel really rewarded for that. James Gunn is a filmmaker who wears his heart on his sleeve and really tries to inject his genuine enthusiasm for his characters, his narrative, his story, his emotion into his films from a personal perspective. And I feel like Superman is a really great example of that. So to our guest then, the aforementioned James Gunn, writer and director of the latest iteration of Superman, starring David Cornswet, Rachel Brosnahan, Nicholas Holt and James's dog. It sees billionaire Lex Luthor attempt to undermine our hero by turning public opinion against him. You'll hear me talk to James about the casting in this film, and David is brilliant as Superman. He brings a real air of kind of swagger, just kind of naturalness, actually, you know, in terms of, like, not to compare him to Christopher Reeves in any way, shape or form, but he's not trying to heighten anything about the character. He's trying to play him with that kind of human touch in a way, which is obviously what Clark really strives for in that character. Rachel Brosnahan, for me, just really epitomises that original Lois Lane character that I fell in love with and was inspired by. And Nicholas Holt will terrify you whilst entertaining you as Lex Luthor. A fantastic performance from all of them. John Murphy and David Fleming's score borrows heavily and quite deliberately from the original music, and we'll begin with one of the cues that they wrote together, Take the Tea Craft.
It's great to see you. It's great to be kind of, you know, thrown into another James Gunn world. It really is just a great cinematic experience again. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
And this is a real, I mean, this has been your kid coming to this. This is you as a child bringing all that enthusiasm, as you always do anyway, but this is a special one for you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is special. I mean, it's something, it does have that, I have that childhood attachment to Superman, like so many of us do. And creating this other universe with, you know, Superman's, you know, this entire DC universe has been, it's like being a kid with my toys in my box again, you know?
And your dog.
And my dog. My dog's in the movie. David Cornswet and I were in the Philippines the other day. And we're driving along and there's all over the buses and the art, all over the buildings, are pictures of him and Crypto. And I'm like, is it weird for you looking around and seeing pictures of yourself everywhere? And he goes, it's a little weird. Yeah, I said, because it's weird seeing my dog all over 200 feet tall on this building. My stupid, dumb dog.
I have a dog, so I feel the love. I feel the love for sure, James. I love the kind of contemporary nature of this film, but how it still has an arm around, you know, that kind of what we all fell in love with originally.
Yeah.
It's kind of really straddling both those worlds. And the music was something that I really wanted to talk to you about, because I think you said that, you know, that original theme is one of the greatest pieces of music ever.
I think if you're talking about just the theme itself, it's probably the greatest theme of all time. And we've had a lot of famous themes from Jaws to Star Wars to 007. And I really think that that's the one that is just the most invigorating and hopeful and beautiful and really, you know, represents the character exactly as he is in musical form.
How did you approach that coming into this and feeling that way about the music and then knowing this is your Superman, you're making it yours, and you have to do that with the music.
Yeah.
And how much you lean into that, how much you do it, and then who you choose to bring along to collaborate with.
Yeah, well, you know, so I always start, you know, with the music starts as soon as the screenplay is done, we start writing score. And I went initially to John Murphy and I said, you know, help me do this movie, and I want to use the original score.
Yeah.
And so I said, I want to, you know, sort of, you know, use different pieces of it, you know, let's, you know, break it down, build it back up again, and just come at it from different directions throughout the movie. And then also, of course, have some original music. And so at that time, John started playing with different things, and he sent me over 300 cues. Yeah. And, you know, including different versions of the Superman theme. And I go, I like that one. That should play over the kids chanting. Yeah. He wrote what became the Lois and Clark love theme, which is a totally original piece of music. So we play those things on set as we're shooting. So all the music is being played and we know it all fits together. I often think of a movie as being like a cake. You know, we're baking a cake. And one of the things that people do is that they leave the music until the last minute, which is like putting the butter on top of the cake after it's already been baked. I don't know anything about baking. I don't even know if that would work. But in my head, it's not the right way to make a cake.
I know what you mean.
And so I don't, you know, I like having the music really organic and built into the movie itself. And then Dave Fleming came in and he helped out because there was so much to do.
Yeah.
And did some and found other pieces. He's like, you know, I remember, you know, we were on a Zoom talking about a scene, the Clark and his dad scene in Pa Kent. And he's like, there's this other piece of the original Williams score that isn't used as much, but it's so beautiful. And he started playing just those few notes. And I like literally he was playing it on the Zoom and I started crying. Aww. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. And that's actually the piece that plays over that scene. It plays at the beginning when he's flying towards us.
Yeah.
And it's and he had a whole other way of coming at it. So I had these two just miraculously gifted, you know, musicians who also, I mean, one of the things is that, you know, when you deal with composers, they're often precious. Like they're often like, well, I don't, you know, I sure I'll have a hint of the John Williams theme in this scene. Yeah. But these guys were both embraced it. You know, they embraced using John's themes, which was great.
About how that piece of music on a Zoom made you, you know, connected with an emotion that you couldn't control.
Yeah.
That's what that theme does for us. You know, for those of us who are old enough to have been through that originally, we have that connection. And then what you've kind of done is you've almost just kind of like sharing it with this new generation of fans. So they also kind of feel the power of that as well in the storytelling, because it's so important to it.
It is. And it's great to think that, you know, there's people, you know, you can come at it from just the part that it's a beautiful piece of music, which children will come and be able to enjoy the music without knowing anything about it. And then the, you know, older people will be able to come and enjoy, you know, because of its connection to the past. And I think that's what the movie is. You know, the movie is, it's completely looking forward. It's a completely about now. It's about today. It's a different Superman, but it's also connected to all the different iterations of Superman throughout the years.
Yeah.
Not just in media or in not just in, you know, television and film, but in, you know, comic books and radio serials and, you know, movie serials from the past. It's he's just been represented in so many different ways that I think of the movie as a collaboration between me and all of the people that came before me.
Yeah. It's just a beautiful idea to think of kind of kids running around with a red cape on again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm already seeing it. It's so cool.
I feel like we've missed him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's such a good and hopeful character who is really looking out for anyone. And people are thirsty for that.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons why people have been so attracted to the movie, why it's gotten such excitement built up around it. It's because people want somebody good.
Yeah.
And it's everybody's always ironic. And Superman's not ironic. He's earnest.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. The casting is phenomenal. I wanted just to mention the casting of Lois in particular and Rachel, because I think, like, for me, that original Lois was an unbeknown to me at the time, was definitely a kind of like influence in terms of kind of how strong she was and how kind of, you know, she had a mission and she was going to accomplish it and she was curious. And
she's throwing herself off buildings so that Superman could catch her.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like you've really, like, Rachel does her version of that, but still has that kind of like real strength that I felt in that original.
I think that was important. I mean, you know, you start with the question, you know, what if Superman was real? So if Superman was real, what would his relationship to the government be like? We examine that. Mm. What would his relationship be like to, you know, the love interest in his life, which is Lois Lane? And then through that, we sort of then all of a sudden start to tell Lois's story. Lois, she has to be an equal and opposite force to Superman. And the thing that is different about this Lois is she has the Superman on his back foot a lot. I mean, he opens the door to her questions and then she is in there relentlessly in pursuit of the truth, which she can't help herself. And it's a scene, you know, when it first happens, about their relationship. It's about who they are as people. It's about each of their really, truly their very intimate belief systems and how they're the same and how they're different. And they're very different.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, in a way, the part of the movie is Lois's story, because she's trying to figure out, how does this guy who's an alien, who just beams out of his eyes, fit into her life? She undoubtedly is incredibly attracted to him. And there's feelings there, but she is cynical. And she's questioning everything. Yeah. And so she's not You know, she's not going to just jump into this thing. She's not sure what she wants to do. And it's a part of their relationship we don't really see expressed very often in any media.
Yeah.
And so that was fun to break down.
And Nicholas Hoult, oh my God, he's so, you know, when you like when a villain is played so brilliantly that you almost kind of want to get into the screen and kind of, he's so good in this.
He is, yeah.
It's almost like that kind of like, you know, that kid at school who would kind of bully you or kind of like, it's got that sort of where they don't listen to any reason. There's no kind of like getting through to them in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
He's this stoic thing and it's like, oh, he's so brilliant.
I relate to Lex. I mean, Lex is, he doesn't want to be replaced. Yeah. And so he is, you know, he's been probably considered the greatest guy in the world. He's done great things for humanity. He's an incredibly intelligent scientist, you know, and so all of a sudden he's faced with, I'm about to sneeze.
Look at the light. Do you want to sneeze?
No, I'm good. Okay. I'm good. Looking at the light was a good idea.
Can't see. Sorry.
Yeah. Now I'm blinded. he thought he was the greatest guy in the world. He had the adoration of him. And even though this is a world with other superheroes, he still was considered the greatest guy in the world. But then this other guy comes along who's an alien. He's not even from this planet. He didn't work to be strong. He just is strong. He shoots beams out of his eyes. And suddenly, you know, he's got dimples. And so everybody loves him. It's so infuriating. And I can understand it, you know? And being a competitive person myself, I hate those feelings in myself when they come up, but I've had them.
Yeah.
Most of us have.
Yeah.
And I think that he then turns that envy into almost a religious belief that he's been given that by God so that he will destroy this parasite and save humanity. And so, it's a pretty backwards way of coming at things, but I believe it. And it's very true to what Lex Luthor was. And I think there's good things in all of the different Lex Luthors portrayed on screen, but he hasn't been, for me, the best character in movies.
Yeah.
He hasn't been as dangerous as he is in the comics, and he hasn't been as threatening as he's been in the comics. And so I really took mostly from the comics for that character.
Nicholas does all of that so well.
Yeah.
So well. I love how you give us an insight into Clark's music taste.
Yes,
I love that.
Yeah,
the posters on the bedroom wall, and they have that little kind of like, what do you mean you like them? I can't remember the name.
The Mighty Crabjoys is the name of the band. And so so Lois and Clark have a discussion about, you know, music at one point. And Lois was a kid who was raised on punk rock. That's what she listened to. She's probably a little skater punk and listened to actual real punk rock. Well, Clark thinks he's punk rock, but he listens to like what is essentially
pop punk.
Blink 182, right? So it's like, and I like Blink 182, but, you know, as a punk rock kid, also they got, you know, they were considered, you know, kind of sellouty.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of music he likes. He names the bands, the Mighty Crabjoys, the PODs, and whatever the other one is. And so, yeah, that's a difference between them. And there's this wonderful moment where I find it's actually, to me, maybe the most touching moment in the movie, where Lois is with, you know, Clark as he's trying to recuperate on the bed with his parents. And his parents are being so loving towards him. And she's looking around the room and she sees his little awards and things like that. And then she sees his Mighty Crabjoys poster. And it's like, you know, for me, seeing into Lois for a minute, she's like, it's like, why would I care? What does it matter? Yeah. You know, music is for everyone. And there is no right way to listen to music. There is no, you know, right music. It's like he loves this band and that's sweet. And then she looks over and she sees his parents caressing his head. And I think in that moment, for me, it's in a way the most important moment for Lois in the movie, because she realizes that Clark just comes from a different place than her.
Yeah.
And all of his beliefs are rooted in the fact that he has a loving home. And it's very different than her home. And we don't get into that in any way. But she's an army brat and she has a very hard father and she has a much tougher life.
Yeah.
And he's just given such unconditional love by these loving Kansas farmers that it's created a different set of looking, a different way of looking at at life.
It's all those kind of little details and stuff, you know, like creating band posters for this band that he likes and the choices that you've made in everything from the fabric of his costume to the colouring of the S, all those kind of little things, but mean a lot.
Everything's meaningful. By the way, did you know, did you hear the Mighty Crabjoy song at the end of the movie?
Is that what it is?
That's a Mighty, yeah, it's the Mighty Crabjoy's theme song. And I wrote that with Eric Nolley from Foxy Shazam.
No way!
Yes, and so, yeah. And the other funny thing is, in the Mighty Crabjoy's poster is Peter Safran's daughter, Lulu.
Okay.
And my godson, Mason, who just happened to be on set. And I'm like, we're going to go shoot this band poster. Do you want to be in this band? He's 16 years old. He's like, okay. So they went and they took him. And then we had these two guys from this punk band in Atlanta that were really nice guys. And so that's who the poster is. But Lulu actually sings on the song that Eric and I wrote. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the Mighty Crabjoy's theme song.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Loads of music before?
I have, yeah, yeah. I mean, I played in bands and always wrote music, and so then I wrote songs for, Scooby, going back to Scooby-Doo, and I wrote music, for Guardians 2,
yeah.
You know, with Tyler Bates,
yeah, yeah.
And then with Rhett Miller for the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. We had a top 14 hit with the Guardians stuff.
A live performance of this closing track from Superman, surely. You need to
at
some kind of premiere. We need the we need the band back.
Yeah, Foxy Shazam's my favorite band anywhere. And so, I think we might have a performance coming up, but I can't talk too much about it. Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool. And just before we finish, locations and things as well are so striking in the film, especially that opening piece, you know, where we find kind of Superman battered. But in terms of you trying to, as much as you can, kind of have that kind of texture nature of real places and stuff, how important was that to you in kind of filming this, as much on kind of location as you could?
It was really important. And what was equally important was being able to have these really grounded places and like create a new farmhouse because I grew up, you know, in what was, now it's very suburban, but as a kid, it was rural Missouri. And so I grew up with the cornfields around my house and horses around my house. And the farms that I grew up around did not look like these picturesque, beautiful farmhouses that you usually see in Superman movies. They were, you know, this converted double wide trailers that were, you know, very well taken care of, but they were, you know, not as elaborate as that. And so I wanted to create these real locations. And then that's, you know, contrasted with, of course, a pocket universe and the fun of jumping back from these very grounded and gritty places to these, you know, incredibly insane places is, I think, part of the fun of the movie, of keeping it alive.
From the original Superman, as that kid, is there a location that really sticks out for you? Because for me, it's the kind of fault line moments, you know, in terms of that kind of landscape that you get to see as well. It's kind of like, yeah, I wonder if there was anything that you wanted to kind of try to pull through aesthetically from that to the, you know, from that first film into yours.
I think that for me, it was mostly the Daily Planet was my favorite location. It was also the most fun to shoot. That gang was really fun.
Yeah.
Just, Michaela is one of my best friends in the world who plays Cat Grant, and Beck is so funny, and Skylar is so funny that we had such a great time shooting that stuff. But to create that sort of Art Deco feeling that was always present in most iterations of Metropolis, yeah. And that we found in Cleveland, Ohio. Although the interior of the Daily Planet is shot outside of Macon County, Georgia, in like the Harriet Tubman Museum, which wow. is like an old train station. And then we built all the desks and everything, and we built an outside so that it looks wow. like it's on a top floor, but it's really just on the ground. And so that was a really great, that location was great. But of course, then, you know, you walk into the Fortress of Solitude, which we built this incredibly huge set.
Yeah.
With, you know, moving chairs and all this yeah. computer stuff. And that was magical. I mean, as a kid who loved the Superman growing up, loved, you know, the Fortress of Solitude is really, really well done in those original Donner films.
Yeah.
So walking onto that set was magical.
Last question. You get to put the cape on.
Yeah.
You get to be in the scene of any, you get to be Superman in any scene.
Yeah.
Across any of the films. What scene are you being Superman in?
Huh. Well, I would like to be floating up and kissing my wife at the end of this movie. Although that's a spoiler, sort of. That would be pretty cool.
I love that.
Especially because I'm on tour and I miss her so much. So,
oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, James, I hope you get to go home soon and fly together. And yeah. congratulations on this film. It's great to chat to you about it.
Oh, thank
thanks
you.
Thanks so much. Oh,
thanks
you.
A lot.
From the score to Superman, that's Metropolis by John Murphy and David Fleming. And I should add that I just spoke to both of them over the weekend individually. And so we'll put those episodes out for you really, really soon. What was great about doing them individually was that I was able to talk to John about working with Danny Boyle, 28 Days Later, Sunshine, as well as kind of him taking a break, but then coming back into it and working on a number of films with James Gunn. And David Fleming, who since we last spoke to him with Gustavo Santaolalla has kind of gone on to do such incredible things, be that Alto Nights amongst many, many others. But that was lovely to play that, which rounds off this latest episode of Soundtracking with James Gunn. Huge thanks to James for taking the time to talk to me. Superman is on general release now, and it is a fine addition to the canon. I've spoken to James before about Guardians of the Galaxy, and you can find that interview at edithbowman.com. Please, if you can, follow us on our socials. We're at Soundtracking UK, and also subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is called Soundtracking Extra. Next up, a brand new TV series out called Too Much. It's on Netflix now. I suggest you go and watch it and then come back to me and listen to my chat with Lena Dunham and her husband, Lewis Felber, a.k.a. Atahualpa, who co-created and Lewis did the score for Too Much. They join me to discuss that, and I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.